Welcome to LPI on Health, a podcast series to inform you about the recent micronutrient research and events coming out of the Linus Pauling Institute at Oregon State University. For more information, visit our website at lpi.oregonstate.edu.
This is Sandra Uesugi with the Environmental Health Sciences Center at Oregon State University. If you find yourself confused by food labels, frustrated by the lack of healthier options, or feel your healthy intentions sabotaged by excessively large portions or an overabundance of cheap processed foods, you are not alone. What can we do about this? Dr. Marion Nessel of New York University has some suggestions. Her research focuses on how science and society influence dietary advice and practice, and is the author of renowned books such as Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health, What to Eat, An Aisle-by-Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating, Safe Food, Bacteria, Biotechnology, and Bioterrorism, and most recently, Pet Food Politics, The Chihuahua in the Coal Mine. I spoke with Dr. Nessel before her public lecture at the 2009 Linus Pauling Institute Diet and Optimum Health Conference in Portland, Oregon, and discussed food choices, food activism, and our responsibility as individuals versus our responsibility as a society.
Oh, hi, I'm Marion Nessel, and I'm professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. I write a column, Food Matters, for the San Francisco Chronicle, and I blog every day, pretty much, at foodpolitics.com, where I talk about issues related to agriculture, food, nutrition, and health, food system issues, which are the kinds of things I'm working on these days.
Great. Tomorrow you're going to be talking about personal versus social responsibility. Could you talk about those?
Sure. I mean, my standard talk is some version of personal versus social responsibility, because most people who advise the public about what to eat put it as a matter completely of personal responsibility. It's your job to make sure that you eat healthfully, meet all your nutritional requirements, and do everything that you're supposed to for your health without ever really taking into consideration how hard it is for so many people to do that. And the best example that I can use is larger portions. There's now so much research that shows that larger portions not only have more calories, but that they encourage people to eat more calories from those portions and to underestimate the number of calories they're eating, even if they're educated about it, even if they've been trained to know that portion sizes are too large and have too many calories, they're still going to eat more calories out of it, even if the food doesn't taste good. And this kind of research, which informs so much of my thinking about these issues, suggests to me that the environment that we live in determines a great deal of how we eat and what we eat and why we eat the way we do. And that if we're going to help people to eat more healthfully, we not only have to educate them about what healthful is, we have to create an environment that makes it easy for them to do that.
And as an individual, how do we encourage policymakers, the industry, healthcare, to help us create an environment where we can make those changes?
Well, my not-so-secret goal is to turn everybody into food activists. I want to see everybody advocating for a healthier food system, not only for people themselves, but for farm animals, farm workers, and the environment, so that everything is tied together. Agriculture is a big contributor to climate change. We have that to consider these days, too. And I just tell people to pick their issues. Pick the one that you really feel passionate about and get out there and join other people who are working on it and get busy. There's plenty to do.
In your book, you outline ways for people to, you basically take us on a tour through the grocery store and how to interpret labels and all the different choices that are there, because it is overwhelming. And I liked your example of how someone can, on a modest budget, incorporate fresh fruits and vegetables into their diet. And with these current economic challenges that we have, do you have other suggestions on how individuals and families can continue to make those choices?
Well, first of all, you have to know how to cook. And my first piece of advice is to teach people how to cook. Now that we have this economic downturn, people in supermarkets are telling me that lots of people are looking at these foods and coming up to the people behind the counter and saying, what do I do with this? They haven't got a clue. And all of a sudden, the supermarkets are finding themselves in the position of cooking schools. They're having to set up cooking schools on their properties in order to help people figure out what to do with these things. Well, I think that's great. If that's a result of the economic downturn, it may be one benefit. But this is about policy also, because there's a reason why fruits and vegetables appear to be so expensive to people who don't have much money, and junk food appears to be so much cheaper. You get more calories out of the junk food than you do from fruits and vegetables, and when people are hungry, they want calories. That's policy, and the policy has to do with the way we subsidize certain kinds of foods and not others. So here again, it's a matter of not only teaching individuals how to cook and how to take care of themselves and their families, but also how to join other people in advocating for a food system that's going to make it easier for everybody to eat better. That's why I think school food is so important, because it's not that kids eat all of their foods in school, but schools set an example of kind of a standard for what appropriate eating is about. And if the schools aren't producing good food for the kids, and if they're giving the kids junk food and making kids think that that's what they're supposed to be eating, then the schools aren't doing their job.
I've heard that school nutrition is going to be changing, and they're trying to incorporate more whole grains, lower fat, but in the forms that kids are used to eating, so corn dogs made with whole grains or lower fat. And does that teach kids healthy eating if they don't realize that that's...
Well, I think that goes under the heading of a particular philosophy that says that a better junk food is a good choice. I think we have to ask the question, is a junk food that has slightly better nutrients and slightly less of the bad stuff in it really a good choice? I think not. What you really want is you want kids eating unprocessed foods or minimally processed foods that are cooked well and taste good and that have all different kinds of textures and flavors and teach them to expand their palates. And in schools that have really serious attempts to try to get kids to eat better, it can be done, and it can be done quite cheaply. And you go into these schools and you watch the kids, and they can distinguish between 10 different kinds of Asian diets. They know the difference between the food consumed in North India and South India. Their palates are expanded. They say the most sophisticated things about the kinds of foods they're eating. They think that miso soup is the best thing they've ever eaten. Even if it's got big chunks of spinach float or seaweed floating in it, they're thrilled beyond belief. And these are just normal kids. They're just normal kids with adults around who think that feeding kids healthy food is important to do. And that's all the difference. That's all the difference.
So I have one last question. Fast food restaurants are now carrying apple slices and other fresh foods that can be incorporated into a kid's meal. What are your feelings about the fact that they are available as choices now, but they're in a fast food setting?
Well, we now have calorie labeling in New York City, where you can go into fast food restaurants in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Queens and Staten Island and the airports, and every single one of them will list the number of calories that are being given there. And there are now lots of studies that are going on of calorie labeling and the effect that it's having on consumers. And what we hear over and over again is that people don't go to fast food restaurants because they want to eat healthfully. They're in fast food restaurants because they don't care about what they're eating. And some of them, a few of them, a very small percentage, will look at the calories, but they won't have any idea what they mean. Or if they do know what they mean, it doesn't have very much effect on the amount that they're eating. So that's not the population that really needs to be, that's going to be affected by this. This is the population that needs to be reached by something, but I think it needs to be reached by fast food restaurants making their foods healthier. There's no reason why they can't do it. And the one thing that calorie labeling has done is it's forced the restaurants to start looking at what they're doing and to start making changes in their formulations. The example that I give is that there was one place in New York that had a pomegranate blueberry smoothie, which you would think would be the healthiest thing in the world. It had 1,200 calories. Now you can't get one for that many calories anymore. It's down to 500. So that's a big change. 500 is still a quarter of an average woman's caloric intake. But at least it's not twice that much.
Do you see that food labeling policy moving towards, or the calorie information moving outside of New York?
Well, Congress has just introduced bills to do national calorie labeling. The Restaurant Association prefers one that's much less explicit, and we'll have to see how all this plays out with the new government. But I'm very optimistic that the new government is going to be able to do some good things. Let's cheer them on.
Well, thank you, Marian.
My pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. This podcast was produced in collaboration with the Environmental Health Sciences Center with funding from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. On behalf of everyone at the Linus Pauling Institute, we wish you optimum health. Have an awesome day.